Moving Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 1025, 1063. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry, live from Bridgestone Arena. Preds tonight taking on Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. So Mike Sando has a piece up at The Athletic, and the headline is depressing. The headline says, Titans could become Texans if they're not careful. Sando talks to former GMs and league executives and all these anonymous people off the record who say what happened with the Titans last week is a freaking mess. And yet every time I bring this up, I feel like I'm Debbie Downer. I feel like all the people, all the calls are the same, all the texts are the same. Amy showed bold leadership to make the decision that she made last week. Don't you want bold leadership, Jared?
Well, there's a difference between bold leadership and bad decisions.
I mean, is it bold if I walk into the casino and say, put all my money on Vanderbilt this week to beat, I don't even know who they're playing in basketball, but they lost to Grambling State on Friday. So
they did.
Whomever, I don't, you know, I'll put all my life savings on Vandy. Bold.
Stupid.
Okay. So that the football people are saying that what the Titans did is stupid. I've been saying for a week now what the Titans did. Well, I wouldn't say a whole week because the first part of the week we were trying to figure out, you know, why did they actually do what they did? And this really has nothing to do with John Robinson.
No.
It just has to do with the decision-making that led to the firing of the general manager on a Tuesday before they were getting ready to play Jacksonville in a game with huge implications and the firestorm that they created and the fact that they didn't do anything to put the fire out, considering that they didn't talk about it on Tuesday. The coach had to talk about it on Wednesday. People don't even know if they can believe the coach. And I mean, it's just, to me, I don't even know what to say about it. And the headline again, Titans could become the Texans if they're not careful. Mike Sando writes in here that Mike Vrabel was indeed convincing and explaining why he was out of the loop with the franchise-altering decision. Whatever the case, the Titans might look back on this period as the moment when a recently successful franchise became a more volatile one. And it basically is a long way of talking to people inside the league that say, okay, one of two things happened. Either Mike Vrabel ran a power play on John Robinson, which is bad, or the owner's crazy.
I don't like either of those scenarios.
Would you agree that that is the gist of
the article? It is one of two, you know, areas of belief. As either Amy Adams Strunk made a really rash and quick decision, or Mike Vrabel pushed John Robinson out.
Okay,
that is the general consensus from the football people, at least.
And regardless of what it is, the football people are all saying whatever ends up coming of this, I'd be careful, including a former GM who said, quote, be careful what you wish for. Don't go giving your head coach carte blanche, especially when they are a strong-minded guy. Now, I've been saying, I mean, banging the drum, that do not make Mike Vrabel the general manager. Like, I don't want Mike Vrabel the general manager. I don't want Mike Vrabel in charge of the organization.
Haven't we learned that lesson?
We?
Just general football observers. Haven't we learned that lesson?
Well, they would argue that Andy Reid has final say in Kansas City, and that works out fine for them. And Bill Belichick has final say in New England, and that's worked out fine for them.
How is that working out without Tom Brady, without an elite quarterback?
I would agree.
I'd like to see Andy Reid without Patrick Mahomes and see how good Andy Reid does.
Well, Andy Reid was really good without
Patrick Mahomes. I know.
I mean, he's got – Andy Reid's got – but we're talking about – do you think that Mike Vrabel's Andy Reid?
No.
You know, that's the thing. So – but it continues on and on and on. You know, one executive currently in the league says they are probably going to hire some first-time guy the coach approves of because that's just the way these things go. So getting some, you know, lowly schmuck out there that is, you know, a first-time guy that's going to be a yes man for Vrabel, just like Mike Reinfeldt when he was here and he was the yes man to Jeff Fisher. Well, I don't want that. And that's what they're saying is going to happen. And what they are trying to tell all of us is the Titans are much closer to the Texans than people want to believe. In fact, not only that, the reason for the, yeah, go Amy, fire him. The thing with those people is that the roster is bad. Well, if the roster is bad and then you run your team like the Texans, you're going to be the Texans. Like, think, I am so scared to death of where this is headed. And yet, I see that, you know, these football people, these executives, the same people that told us, hey, Caleb Farley's back. We looked at his medicals, and they were terrible. And we complained about that. The same people that told us that 2 years ago are telling us right now, like, yo, this is about to become an unmitigated disaster. And here I am. I feel like I'm the only person in the city that believes this. I feel like I'm the only person in the city that hears the Titans might become the Houston Texans and then sees football people, not the Jared Stillmans, not, you know, the In the Titans We Trust section 319, not those guys, but league executives saying, whoa, 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 whoa. And it scares me. It makes me, I cannot tell you how adamantly I feel that the Titans are headed down the tubes. That if I had to bet on it, you know the old saying, I'm rooting for you, but I'm betting against you?
Uh-huh.
If I had to bet on it, I would say that in 2 years, everybody around here, there's going to be a giant cloud over the organization. Because the only way that they get themselves out of this is if they just find the best football guy out there and they hire him to be GM and he's the best GM in the league and he can get along with Vrabel. And I don't know how many people are out there that don't have a track record of success as a GM that could walk in here and be able to make good picks and be able to get Vrabel to answer to him. I just don't know how many of those people exist.
Well, I just overall tend to believe that there, when you fire a general manager and you keep a coach, same thing in college, and you fire an AD and keep a coach, it's really difficult to kind of force that marriage. Normally, you bring in an AD, you bring in a GM, they want to bring in their guys. So I'm not even just talking about the Titans specifically, but overall, my general, you know, belief is that you cannot fire from the top and then rehire at the top and expect everyone underneath to fall suit. It just doesn't work. It's an awkward dynamic there.
And the football people are telling you this in this Mike Sando article, a former league executive talking about Vrabel. You can easily make the case Vrabel hasn't coached long enough to learn the intricacies of personnel, player acquisition, trade, and free agent markets, not to mention the salary cap and all the other things GMs do that go way beyond the draft. And last week, I was saying that all last week. Do not make him the GM. He is not trained to be the GM. He's never done personnel in his life. And you're going to put him in charge of a team. That doesn't make a lot of sense. A longtime executive quoted in here, or excuse me, a current coach that's quoted in here, talking about John Robinson, Mike Vrabel says, she dropped the hammer on a guy who by all accounts is doing no better or worse than any of the other guys who have been in the league as long as he has. What is her angle? What is she not happy with? Where does she see this going? If you take the perspective of Vrabel is orchestrating it, then that's the answer. Mm-hmm. You know, the coach is saying then, Vrabel's running
power
a power
struggle.
Play, that's what it is.
Vrabel wins.
And if it's a power struggle and Vrabel wins, we're all screwed. I think we can agree with that, right?
I don't like the way that the franchise would go.
Okay. The coach then continues and says, but if you take it from the perspective of the owner is not happy and trying to do something bigger, it's different. Theoretically, even Vrabel could be on the outs if this person is unhappy. So, it's a long range of what the hell's going on with this organization, and every road, it feels like, is leading the Titans down the path of what Cleveland does, what the Texans do. And I don't know if you guys have enjoyed the last 6 years of either being in the playoffs or playing that last Sunday night football game against the Colts in order to get in the playoffs, or at least having your season matter around Christmas every single year for the last half decade. But I'm not ready to go back to the Mike Munchak and Ken Wisenhunt days where you were Cleveland, where you were the Texans, where you were Washington, where you were the Jets, where you were these franchises that we laugh at. I am not ready to go back to that. And the foreshadowing from everybody who doesn't have their skin in the game is, yeah, looks like you're headed back to that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. And it depresses me. It depresses me, the amount of people that are just like, oh, no, Jared Amy, she knows what she's doing. Based off of what? based off of what? What tells you that she knows what she's doing on this? All the football people are saying she doesn't know. But the text line wants to tell me that she knows. That's frustrating. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your phones on this. 615-737-1025 if you want to weigh in. Plus, speaking of football people, they still don't believe some of the things that we've been told. We'll get to that coming up next here on the program. FanDuel Sportsbook is my official sportsbook app. Now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because right now, new customers get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000. That's free bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code JGM. FanDuel has all of your favorite bets, from the money line to point spreads to player props, and you can combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. With live betting, you'll get updated odds on games that have already started, and you'll get paid your winnings quickly. All on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So sign up today with the promo code JGM and get your no-sweat first bet. That's promo code JGM and make every moment more this season with FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 and older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. Refund issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789.
Honestly, I had made the decision. It was time to move forward. There was no reason to, like, you know, go 6, 7, 8 weeks, however long we remain in the season. It was not fair to John. It was not fair to the team. It just seemed the right thing. It gives us plenty of opportunity now to identify future candidates that we're going to interview, to get to know watch the internal candidates. It's, I'm just not that person that's going to sit on a decision like that.
I mean, I love how she says to the AP, yeah, I just didn't see a reason in not doing it. I was like,
other than the impact on the team.
I mean, again.
But I do appreciate the spin that Amy tried to put on it of, I'm trying to be honorable. Of why would I put John Robinson through 6 weeks of him not knowing what his inevitable fate was?
If you ran a biology department and you were going to fire a professor at the end of the year because you didn't think they were a very good professor, would you let them finish out the semester or would you fire the teacher right then and there?
I'd probably just let him finish out the semester.
Okay. What if you caught him with child porn?
Well, you gone.
So that's that's where, again, if there was misconduct involved, okay, but there's not any inclination that that's what it was. Though Mike Lombardi, former general manager, mm-hmm. two stints with Belichick, I don't think he and John had any time that overlapped in New England. But they're still part of that brotherhood. And I could be wrong. They could have overlapped. He was on Mad Dog Russo's channel, Mad Dog Radio on Sirius XM on Friday, and he is not buying that this was not about the plane in Green Bay.
I think for Tennessee, look, they're not a talented team. They fired their general manager this week. If you go through the draft.
Yeah, why'd they do that? Why'd they do that?
I would think, to me, this is more about the plane ride home from Green Bay after they won that game. There's a rule that you're not allowed to have alcoholic beverages on the plane, okay? And what happened, I think, ultimately, Todd Dowling got a DUI on his way home. That's fact. So something happened on that airplane. And the guy who's in charge of controlling those things, who's put in charge by the ownership group, is the general manager. So
well, why did you wait 2 weeks and not fire right on the spot, if that's the case?
Well, I think they did an investigation. I think the league's been investigating it, too. I think the league went into it. Now, we'll hear something. It's the same thing like when we had this conversation about Dan Snyder, and I said that Goodell's working behind the scenes to get this sold because we know it's going to be bad. We find out yesterday how bad it is. And so we know he's going to sell the team now. So there's things that happen behind the scenes that don't always necessarily come right out. If he was going to get fired for bad drafts, which he's had a lot of bad drafts, he would have been fired. He would have been fired in the offseason. But they gave him a contract extension in the offseason. So something triggered the firing.
The football people, they're not buying the stuff that people around here are 100% believing. Then the power struggle with Vrabel. Again, Lombardi, New England guy, overlaps with Belichick. I don't think that he overlapped with Vrabel. I think it was Pioli who was there when Vrabel was there. So I don't think his time overlaps with Vrabel either. But here's what Lombardi said about the power struggle with Vrabel.
It's not the relationship with Vrabel. They get along fairly well.
No, I think that is part of the problem, too. That's part B of the equation. I mean, when Rabel goes and tells ESPN that he's not trading A.J. Brown, and then 2 days later they trade him, how do you think that makes the coach feel? There's no alignment, you know. It would be like, you know, would you ever do that to your coach? Of course you wouldn't. But obviously he made that decision. He had the authority, and I don't think Vrabel was ever going to get over that.
So everything that we're being told, Lombardi says, is not, you know, Lombardi says, you know, the plane from Green Bay is part of the equation, says he and Vrabel didn't get along, which we were told, you know, the opposite, right?
Right.
And Joe
Rex,
it was
nothing. It was just to time.
Joe thinks we're like QAnon theorists because we talk about that Green Bay plane, but everybody brings it up. So phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jim is in Franklin. He's up next. Thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. What's up, Jim?
Yeah, hey, Jared. I was always touched by your relationship with Floyd, which was
Thank
so
you.
Tender and genuine. And if you could channel him right now, what would he say? You're in a great position to speak to this. What would he say about the J-Rob firing? And I'll hang up and listen.
I think the number one thing he would say, thank you for your call, Jim, I think the number one thing he would say is, don't you dare put words in my mouth. That's the first thing I think he would say. Ian, would you agree with that?
Probably pretty fair.
So for me to tell you what I think Floyd would have said would have pissed Floyd off. Now, that being said, this is never shy to do that every now and then. I think Floyd would be really upset. I mean, I think he wouldn't say it on the air, I don't think. I don't think he'd even say it to me. But I think he'd be really upset. I think he'd be really upset about what Amy did, when she did it, the fact that he's been winning, I think he'd have a hard time with. But I think a lot of the mistakes that John Robinson made along the way, I think Floyd would have also had a really hard time with. And I've always joked that, like, he wasn't racist or sexist, or, but he was an injurist. And if you were injured, he didn't like you. And so for the Titans to trade a second-round pick and take on the money for Julio Jones, I think he'd be really mad about that. And the drafting of Caleb Farley with a back injury. I mean, Ian, I don't think it's wrong to put I don't think I'm putting words in his mouth to say that he would not have drafted Caleb Farley and would not have been on board with drafting Caleb Farley.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably pretty accurate.
So yeah. I think he'd be upset with John for some of the decisions that he made as a general manager. I think ultimately he would look at John's record and say, what are you doing? And John was his guy. But, I mean, I also think he would look at what Amy did and he would be disappointed about how that went down and when it went down. Both that they did it and when they did it, I think, would bother him. And then I think the final piece to this is I don't think he'd say a word about it. I don't think he'd say a word about it in defense of John. I don't think he'd say a word of it, you know, attacking Amy's decision. I don't think you would have heard anything out of him because, I mean, he's in the team's Hall of Fame. And he takes the relationship with the team. He took the relationship with the team very seriously. And so I think he would have stayed really out of it, but I think he would have been pretty upset all around. Ed is up next on the quarterback. Thank you for calling. What you got for me, Eddie?
Hey, Jared. I'm so sick. Look, John Robinson was arrogant. He was pompous. And more than anything else, he refused to accept the idea that you have to change. Nick Saban has changed. Case in point.
How did John Robinson not change, Ed?
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to give it to you right now. Listen here.
Give it to me. There,
listen, Bill Belichick, since Tom Brady left, Bill Belichick is 36 and 38. While Tom Brady was there, 75% of their games they won. Okay? Now, John Robinson thinks you can win with average players, including the quarterback play. You cannot do it in the NFL. Get me a quarterback, okay? I don't care who the GM is, and I don't really care who the coach is. Andy Reid had Donovan McNabb in Philadelphia for 10 years. He won. Donovan McNabb was an average quarterback. He leaves, they fire Andy Reid. He gets Mahomes. He will win as long as Mahomes is in Kansas City. Get me a quarterback in Nashville, and we will win for the next 20 years. I don't care who the GM is.
How are you going to get me a quarterback?
That's his job. That is his job.
Okay. I mean, I hear you, Ed. Thank you for your call. I mean, I would love for the Titans to be able to acquire Joe Burrow. I mean, if you told me that there was a GM out there that could convince the Cincinnati Bengals to trade Joe Burrow to the Tennessee Titans, I'd help John. I'd call TriStar Moving up right now. And I'd send those vans over to John's house. I would. If you were telling me that you could get Joe Burrow to to be the next quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. Here's the problem. That's not how this works. The Titans win too many games, and you all can't stand losing because you guys throw a fit about the general manager that won a bunch of games but didn't win enough of the games. So I know you guys can't stand losing. I know you guys can't stand losing in hopes that the year that you lose, there will be a Joe Burrow or a Peyton Manning or a John Elway at the top of the draft and not a Kenny Pickett at the top of the draft. Like, I know how you all work. So you're going to sit there and tell me of like, hey, they got to find the quarterback. They got to listen. I said go all in for Russell Wilson. I did. Did I not?
Yeah, I mean, and if the Titans would have done that, then John Robinson probably did deserve to lose his job.
Okay.
But there are two ways to acquire elite quarterbacks. The quarterback that caller wants. You can either be bad enough to draft one and hope that quarterback works out, a la Joe Burrow. A lot of them don't, a la Kyler Murray. Or you can trade a bunch of picks to get one. See how that worked out for Denver. And if the Titans did decide to do that, I can already hear so many people bitching and moaning about, but we don't have a right tackle.
Yep.
What about the wide receiver needs?
Yep.
What about all of the other needs in this team? What are they doing throwing away three first-round picks? Who's this quarterback going to throw to? It's a double-edged sword.
Are you familiar with the name Cordy Glenn?
No.
So Cordy Glenn was the left tackle of the Buffalo Bills. He was a Pro Bowl left tackle. And before the 2018 draft, the Buffalo Bills, who had made the playoffs the year before, traded Cordy Glenn to the Bengals with their first-round pick to move up to get the Bengals' first-round pick, which was still in the middle of the first round. It wasn't at the top of the first round. And so they traded their Pro Bowl left tackle in order to move up in the first round, which then they later had to move up again in the first round in order to draft Josh Allen. If Josh Allen doesn't become Josh Allen, they all get fired.
Yes.
This is a hard job now. Like, I want people to understand that. Like, and there are five quarterbacks. I realize this about quarterback play. There are five quarterbacks in the world that elevate your team. Everybody else needs the infrastructure of good players around them, good coaching, and, you know, they need, like, a solid organization.
Baker
and
Mayfield.
When Tannehill, it's not just Baker. It's Derek Carr.
One of them.
It's Matthew Stafford. It's
Jalen Hurts.
It's Jalen Hurts.
Tua Tagovailoa.
It's all of them. It's all of them except the guys who suck. That they need that infrastructure. And when Ryan Tannehill had that infrastructure, you were really good offensively. And he was really good. He was Joe Montana level good. So, I mean, I get it. You know, I want a quarterback too, caller. But you tell me how to get it. Or you tell me if there's a guy out there that can identify how they're going to find that guy. And then I'll be on board with it. But right now, I mean, the Titans have probably a top 12 quarterback, top 15 quarterback in the league. And I've seen a lot of worse quarterbacks around here. Trevor Maddich will join us next. ESPN college football analyst Trevor will join us on the program here on Stillman & Company, live from Bridgestone Arena, Edley's Barbecue. I love my friends at Edley's Barbecue. If you haven't figured out who is catering your holiday party, you need to go ahead and talk to my friends at Edley's. Edley's has been voted Nashville's best barbecue 4 years in a row. Edley's Barbecue is a winning pick. Pickup, delivery, full-service catering, you name it, they've got it. They've got full bar packages and bartending services. Perfect for small gatherings, corporate meetings, box lunches, team celebrations, special occasions like a wedding, a rehearsal dinner, or a holiday party. That's right. Let Edley's Barbecue take care of all of that. My dad had a 70th birthday a couple years ago, and when we did, we catered with Edley's, and boy, was the food fantastic. And, of course, they got their packages as well for all of that. Every special occasion you can think of, Edley's can take care of it. Call your neighborhood Edley's or order online at edleysbbq.com. Once again, voted Nashville's best barbecue 4 years in a row. It's Edley's Barbecue. Order online at edleysbbq.com. Hey, Breds fans, want to win tickets in the lower bowl, section 102? Just text the keyword Superbook, all one word, to the game text line at 615-737-1025, and you will be entered to win. And you can win with 102.5 The Game and Superbook Sports Photo, the number one sportsbook app in Vegas. Download their app today. Trevor Maddich joins us, ESPN college football analyst, presented by Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts of wall-to-wall sports and Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. A sad day in college football today, Trev. The passing unexpectedly of head coach Mike Leach at Mississippi State. Of course, the innovator of the air raid offense, he and Hal Mumme. And, of course, the success he had at Washington State, Texas Tech. And recently with Mississippi State. Trev, I didn't know Mike Leach, and I know that you did. So just what are some of your thoughts today when you think back to Coach Leach, who he was and what he meant to college football?
I've never known anybody like him. Not just in football, but really anywhere. Jared, he was just such an innovator, but also such a hard-nosed, old-school, hardcore football coach. And I think a lot of people don't realize that about him on the field because they see him as, you know, the air raid and spread the ball out, and sometimes they don't run it but several times a game, and so he's a finesse coach. Well, no, he's not. The dude is hardcore. I've seen him on the practice field a number of times at Washington State, Texas Tech, and at Mississippi State. And I tell you, he would fit right in from a standpoint of just the foundation of how he approaches the game with the great coaches of the 60s and the 70s. And then he's got the innovation. And part of that innovation was because he never was encumbered with the knowledge of how things have always been done or how they should be done. I mean, I don't think he played football on any level, as far as I know. He may have played in high school. He played rugby at BYU. He was a lawyer and decided he wanted to coach football. And so he figured, okay, well, starting from scratch, what's the best way to do this offense thing? And it was opposite of what everybody was doing at the time, which was wishbone and triple option and 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And you had the fun and gun going on in Miami and Florida and stuff like that, but really – football was still more of an old school kind of game, and he just flipped everything around at Oklahoma when he was the offensive coordinator there under Bob Stoops, and everybody picked it up. I mean, high school, college, NFL. I mean, there's very few people that you could really point to as having a greater influence as to how the game is approached, just from a standpoint of on the field and offensive schemes, than what Mike Leach has done. And then on top of that is away from the game. He was so curious about everything. If you wanted to find out something from him about insurgency tactics in Laos and Cambodia in the 60s and the 70s, he knew it. And if he didn't know it and he found it interesting, he'd be curious and he'd go learn it. And he understood history. He understood so many things, and that's one of the reasons that there were so many fun interview moments with him. Because he was legitimately curious about so many things in life, to the point that he would go learn about them because they were fascinating to him. Then you put all that together with his football persona, and you had a presence that is unlike any other that I've ever been around.
You know, Trev, I think back to the fact that he's only been in the SEC for a couple of years, and just his personality alone, I look back at what he brought to the league, and I think to myself, this is a devastating loss. Not just because of the personality, not just because of the fact that he made Mississippi State a tough out, whether it was in Alabama or a good LSU or somebody like that. If they were playing Mississippi State, it was going to be a tough out with him coaching with the air raid. But just the fact that the SEC has a certain way that a lot of the coaches are and a certain way a lot of the programs are, and Mike Leach was none of that. And I thought he was a great addition to the Southeastern Conference to have him in it. And I think he's really going to be missed in this league for what he's brought the last couple of years, Trev.
Well, styles make fights, right, Jared? Mm-hmm. And his style of offense was just so different from what you saw for the most part in the SEC. Now, you've got Josh Heupel at Tennessee, which is doing a very similar kind of an offense. I mean, Josh Heupel was his quarterback in 1999 at Oklahoma, for goodness sake. And so, you know, that's sort of the start of that tree. And Lane Kiffin also, very innovative. And so it's not like Mike Leach is the only innovative guy in the SEC, but the way that he went about it was completely unique. And it forced other teams to have to deal with things defensively that they just didn't want to have to deal with. I mean, you go back to the way the SEC kind of is, right? And how it got to this point from a coaching standpoint, the styles of coaches, even though the likes of Nick Saban expanded their horizons when it came to what offenses should look like in this league, they still kind of were the same kind of guy, right? Well, Mike Leach was a different kind of guy. He was his own breed of cat. He didn't care which way the wind was blowing. He didn't care how anybody else did anything at all. He wasn't disrespectful of others, but he was going to do it his way, and that's it. He'll listen to you. He'll learn from you, but then he'll do it the way he thinks is best. And I think that is the refreshing breath of fresh air that he really brought to it more than any other single thing, because once again, he never was encumbered by the concept of how coaches should look and do and be and sound. And so he just did it his own way. And in a lot of ways, that opened the door for so many coaches to come in and be creative outside of the box that people expect them to be in. I mean, when you look at the SEC, Urban Meyer kind of broke things open with crazy offenses, I think you could say, when he brought the zone read offense from Utah to Florida. Everybody thought it wouldn't work because you get your quarterback smashed. And he just proved that, yeah, no, it'll work. It'll work just fine. He won a couple of national championships with that offense, and then all of a sudden everybody's running it in the NFL as well for the most part. And then you've got Mike Leach coming in with with the air raid and his style of doing things. And part of his style is that he didn't, people think he doesn't like to run the ball. Well, to Leach, the concept of balance is not you have an even balance between run plays and pass plays in a game. No, he didn't care about that. To him, balance was balance, of your playmakers all getting touches. And as long as your playmakers are getting touches, he doesn't care if you throw it to him, hand it to him, toss it to him, doesn't matter. But it really freaked people out when you play Mike Leach and you only run the ball 7 times and he would beat you in the SEC doing that. Well, it's not because he was finesse. He wasn't. He was old school hardcore. His running backs, though, would get their touches, just not the way you gave your running backs the ball.
Trevor Maddich is our guest. Trevor, what were your experiences like with Coach Leach, and if there's anything that sticks out to you? Because, again, I never met him, but the one thing that every single person who interacted with Mike Leach is remembering today feels like his uniqueness. What was that like for you?
It was wonderful. I mean, I love history too. I love a lot of the things that he loves for similar reasons. And so we had some conversations about history, about World War II, about mistakes made by the Allies at the beginning of World War I that led to the spark of that conflict and how to avoid that in today's world, and things like that. These are the kinds of things that he could talk about at length, and he's fascinating about it. But what really stood out, though, was how different he was on the practice field than I expected him to be. I mean, the first time I really saw him on the practice field was at Washington State. And it was spring ball. They started practice, went through stretch, all individual stuff, and guys were a little loose. They weren't as dialed in mentally as he wanted them to be, and they weren't responding to him. And so he said, all right, bring it up. Stretch again. And he started practice all over again about 40 minutes into it. And I'll tell you what, I've had that happen once in my life. And that is not something that you want as a player. I mean, he was going to insist that everybody do things the right way, or they were going to do them again until they got it right. That's a Nick Saban kind of attitude. But that's his attitude. It's just very, very old school. It was the same kind of thing when I saw them do off-season workouts, midnight conditioning at Mississippi State. Right? The guys were out there working like crazy. And if you didn't know who Mike Leach was and you thought he was a Nick Saban disciple when it came time to focus guys in on doing the drills and doing the work and focusing on them in the right way and expecting nothing but excellence, you would have said, yeah, that's a Nick Saban guy. But no, it was Mike Leach. It was the same attitude, the same philosophy. He just got two things in a completely different way, but he got to the same place.
Trevor Maddich is our guest, ESPN college football analyst. Again, the coach of Mississippi State, Mike Leach, passing away today. Too young at the age of 61 years old. I mean, just tragic to hear that news coming out. Trevor is with us. Hey, Preds fans, hang out before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge and Landshark Bar and Grill Margaritaville on Broadway with 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials, plus enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Stillman and Company, Trevor Maddich is with us, ESPN College Football Analyst, presented by Twin Peaks, home of 29 Degree Drafts of Wall-to-Wall Sports and Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters. Hey, be sure to play Silly Underdog Picks, by the way. Play now at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. And Superbook Sports, voted the number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. Trev, I want to start with this. The Heisman Trophy. I have a bone to pick with you on the Heisman Trophy. I did not think, one, that Caleb Williams, when I think of Heisman Trophy, I do not think of the season that Caleb Williams had at USC. I'm sorry, but 99% of us did not watch any of the games he played until the Pac-12 championship game. And even though he got hurt in that game, he stunk, they stunk, they got blown out. Secondly, the voters, who is voting on this award that is not voting for Hendon Hooker and the season that he had, or Blake Corum and the season that he had, but they're voting for Stetson Bennett? I mean, I was on Sirius XM during the Heisman Trophy show on Saturday, and I was like, nobody in America even cared about this year's Heisman Trophy, but what a disgrace. Your thoughts on the Heisman Trophy?
Well, first of all, there are about 900 Heisman voters, and I respect most of them. I think some of them probably were awarded their vote in a divorce by a judge. And so I wonder what they're thinking. I think when you look at Hendon Hooker, I get the impression that he had his votes diluted by Bryce Young and then, of course, Stetson Bennett. And what they do to separate who goes to New York and who doesn't is look at where it's close. They take the top three, and then is three pretty close to four, and is four pretty close to five. But then if there's a big gap between five and six, six doesn't get to go. And I don't know what those exact numbers are, but I think Hendon Hooker was number five. And so I kind of think that votes for him must have gotten split in the southeastern region by the voters there, because there were some other players that also had really, really good years, and that's why he wasn't in New York, because he certainly should have been.
What do you make about Blake Corum not getting the invite? 1,400 rushing yards, carrying Michigan. I know he didn't play in the Ohio State game much, but I thought that he was the leader of that Michigan team. I know he got hurt. But Caleb Williams got hurt in the Pac-12 championship game, and he still won his award. So I thought it was ridiculous that Blake Corum wasn't there, Trevor.
I agree. Corum did so many things that didn't show up in the box score. He was such a phenomenal blocker. I mean, there was a play where the offensive line split and picked up two blitzing linebackers and left the nose guard to rush unimpeded to the quarterback on a third down. Blake Corum was supposed to block one of those linebackers. He flew up and didn't go down low and cut down that big nose guard barreling at the quarterback. He stuck his face mask right in the guy's sternum and stopped him cold. Quarterback completes the ball, extends the drive, right? The kinds of things that just don't show up. But at the same time, I think what may have hurt him more than his injury was that Donovan Edwards had those two big long runs against Ohio State when he was out injured. And I think some people were thinking, well, gee, if Edwards can do it, then maybe we won't. You know, it's like the injury. You mentioned the injury to Caleb Williams, the USC quarterback. See, I thought that when they announced the Final Four that Caleb Williams should have won it, and he did. And it's because he did more with less than any of the other finalists. And his ability to run around really elevated that team and carried that team. And it wasn't just to run when things broke down and gain yards on the ground. It was running around when things broke down, looking to throw the ball if he possibly could before he crossed the line of scrimmage. And that's one of the reasons their offense was so good. It's one of the reasons that they made the Pac-12 championship game. And it's one of the reasons I think that was showcased in the Pac-12 championship game for those who watched him play the rest of the season when he got hurt. They were up 17-3 early in that game, and then he popped his hamstring. Then he was not able to run around and extend plays that he had to do because his offensive line wasn't very good. And so Utah would pressure him a lot and sack him a lot after he got hurt, whereas ordinarily they would pressure him, he'd make somebody miss, and he'd go out and make a big play anyway a lot. And when he was no longer able to do that, you saw how their team completely broke down. And so I thought that it was good that Caleb Williams won the Heisman Trophy. The others had Heisman-winning campaigns. Stetson Bennett, to me, had a Heisman-winning season. But I thought Caleb had just one notch above the rest of them because of what he had to work with around him.
Trevor Maddich is with us. Trevor, which team in the coaching carousel season that we've had, which team do you think hit it out of the park with a new coaching hire? What team are you most optimistic for with the new coaching market going the way it is?
You know, the one that hit it out of the park was Colorado with Deion Sanders. Mm-hmm. Came over from Jackson State. I don't know that that's the best place for Deion, but Deion was certainly the best coach for Colorado because they have been an afterthought forever. And they haven't been able to get a whole lot going with donations, with NIL. Well, what better way to shake loose NIL money out of the pockets of businessmen that are in that area? There's a lot of money in the Boulder, Denver, Colorado area than to promise quality time with Coach Prime if you'll step up and get the collective going. When it comes to recruiting, he is a guy that showed at Jackson State that he can not only bring in top recruits, but he can develop them, not just on the field as players, but also off the field, because he has a high expectation, an old school high expectation of how his players should behave off the field, the respect that they should show to women, to authority figures, et cetera. And I think parents will really appreciate that about entrusting their sons to Deion Sanders. So I thought that all the things he brings in to bring some star power and relevance that will have tangible effects in terms of NIL and recruiting, I thought Colorado was the one that really hit it out of the park.
Which team do you look at a coaching hire and you say, you know what, I'm not sure that fits exactly what they're looking for?
Oh, you know, I'm going to have to look at him for that. Let me.
Can I throw one out there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Satterfield to Cincinnati. I think Scott Satterfield is a mid-major coach. I think he's average. At Louisville, I was happy when I heard that he was going to Cincinnati. And I look at the coach they did have, Luke Fickell. I'm like, that was a great coach. And now I think they've got an average coach. What do you think?
Well, he was a great coach at Appalachian State, wasn't he?
You're just proving my point that he's a mid-major coach.
Well, maybe so, but you know, I thought there were, I don't want to say holes. I want to say that I expected him to elevate Louisville more than he did. And so I still believe in him, but at the same time, I think what Cincinnati got was a solid coach that still has to prove that he's an elite coach. So in that regard, I think you've got a good point, Jared.
But in that case of Cincinnati, you don't want to be the guy who follows the guy. And he's following the guy, is he not? Luke Fickell? I mean, I think Luke Fickle's a great coach.
Well, Luke Fickell took Cincinnati to about the highest you could possibly get as a group of five. We brought him to the playoff. And they were a legitimate playoff team. Now they're going to the Big 12. So in Satterfield, at least Cincinnati has a coach that has coached in the Power Five. He coached in the ACC. He understands the rigors of recruiting at that level. He understands, you know, the what it takes to coach at that level, even though he didn't take Louisville as high as I think a lot of people expected him to. But for Cincinnati, that's one of the things that you kind of wanted, because you need to usher the program into the Big 12, not elevate the program to be competitive in the Big 12. They're already there. You need a guy that can at least keep them where they are and then move on from there. So did they hit it out of the park? That remains to be seen. But I agree with you, Jared, that in his previous stop with the Cardinals, he didn't show that he's a guy like Coach Prime that you can just point to everything great about.
Trevor, last one for you. A wild week for the Titans with John Robinson being fired. Who knows if Vrabel's going to get promoted to GM or whatever it may be. Joe Rexroth wrote a piece, you know, his own column about Mike Vrabel and how Ohio State, if they become unhappy with Ryan Day, should offer the farm for Vrabel. Now, I'll say this. You can't be getting your ass kicked by Michigan every year if you're going to be the coach at Ohio State. And I'm not a Ryan Day guy. Do you foresee a future in which Ohio State is interested in Mike Vrabel? And could the future without Ryan Day be sooner rather than later?
I think Ryan Day is the future of that program. I think he's an outstanding coach. I think they got their doors blown off last year, but this year's loss to Michigan was a completely different animal. Basically, they made five big mistakes on defense that are all correctable, and that allowed five long touchdowns. Other than that, Ohio State kind of had a beat. And so I thought that, you know, it was a different reason to be mad at the coaching staff than that they got their doors blown off because it was a different way to lose. I like Ryan Day, but if they ever do decide to move on from him, I can't think of anybody besides Mike Vrabel that they would want to go after. And they have enough money to certainly make him any offer he wants, but so does the NFL, so do the Titans if they want to keep him. Then it would just become whether or not Vrabel wants to get back into the college ranks. And keep in mind that there's a lot of similarities in coaching NFL and college, but the differences are vast. And the biggest difference is recruiting. In the NFL, if you need someone, you can go in the free agent market and you can buy them. You know, up until recently with NIL, you couldn't just go buy them. Now you kind of can. And so there have been NFL coaches that have not succeeded at the college level, even though they were great at the highest level, because they didn't understand the concept of roster development and roster turnover when they didn't have free agency, but now they do. And so if that might be something that would be an obstacle that has been ushered off the table, Mike Vrabel, I think, would end up being a phenomenal coach in Ohio State. I mean, perfect coach in Ohio State. The only question is, does he actually want to do it? But keep in mind that Ohio State has got a coach. His name is Ryan Day, and he's very good.
Trevor Maddich, as always, on our program. Trevor, great stuff. Appreciate you. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Jared.
Yep, Trevor Maddich joining us on the program. Okay. One, they talked to two separate, The Athletic did, two former longtime Titans employees. And what they said about Amy Adams Strunk's move last week scares me. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.